Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. Hi, everybody, and welcome. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. Before we get the show off to a start, I wonder if I can ask you one huge favour, please. I've had great feedback from people telling me how much they enjoy the show, they enjoy the interviews and how much they're getting out of it. But to help me push the show up the rankings even further, what I would love is if they could do a couple of things. Could you review and rate the show on iTunes? That would help me to be pushed up the rankings so that more women get to hear the show. And if you really like what you hear, I would love if you could share with all the women you know out there. So get the word out. Let's share the show with all the other women. Now, this week I'm in conversation with Amy Grant, and I really love this conversation because it's not often I get the opportunity to go behind the face of women we see every day, especially when I've worked with these women in the past and I've just probably said a quick glance, a quick hello. This week is no exception. Amy Grant is a self-proclaimed travel junkie in love with foreign cultures, experiences, and the inevitable commonalities, always connecting even the most distinct societies. Amy's love of travel began when she was a little girl in Inglewood, New Jersey, and was nurtured through her study abroad experiences in high school and Spelman College to Eastern Europe and the UK. This led to her the completion of a BA in History and Master of Science in Foreign Service from Georgetown University, where she spent a summer in Honduras interning at the US Embassy. Amy channeled her love of culture and history into a successful marketing career, where for the last 15 years, she has specialised in building marketing communication programmes based on morphing cultural and generational insights into dynamic and integrated campaigns designed to bring brands closer to their target markets. Amy has served in this capacity for companies in the pharmaceutical industry, tourism, entertainment and telecommunications. She spent 11 years at Verizon, where she's responsible for its national promotional advertising and led integrated broadcast and digital marketing initiatives targeting the US wireless division, mass multicultural and millennial segments. Currently, Amy is head of brand and consumer at Digicel Caribbean Limited, a global telecom and entertainment provider operating the Caribbean, South Pacific and Central America. She is responsible for all brand positioning, regional marketing communications and insights, and is based out of St. Lucia. Besides her love of travel, she enjoys spending time with her two nephews, is an active member of her sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, and has just finished a documentary entitled Two Deaths, which documents the last days of a mother's bout with Alzheimer's. So, Amy, I would love to say welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. I would have given a brief bio at the top of the show about you, but I know there's a lot more to tell. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and your humble beginnings, please.
Sure. Okay, so where do I begin? I am a Black American woman right now living in the Caribbean, working for a global telecom company. But who I am, I started out as that young little girl, curious, you know, curious about what was beyond my block, what was beyond my neighborhood in New Jersey, in Inglewood, New Jersey. And my parents really cultivated that. So at an early age, they brought us with them on trips, vacations, and it really made me want to know who others were and realize not only that we were different, but always looking for that similarity or that common point where I could connect with someone. And I think that's been a stream and has led me to where I am today. I grew up, as I said, in a small town in Englewood, right outside of New York City. My parents were New Yorkers and moved us out to the suburbs. My community was diverse, but my high school was not. We were predominantly Black and Latino. And from there, I decided that and early on, that I grew up at a time where there was a lot of, in the States, called, in those suburb communities, called white and white. So schools that were once very diverse became not. And then there were certain concerns about the level of education and were you good enough. And that affected me as I was applying to college, because I had that kind of stigma. Well, you know, I'm not sure if I'm good enough because I'm at a school that is predominantly Black, predominantly Latino. But, you know, I still always tried to counter that voice of self-doubt. Yeah. I ended up going to an all-women's college in Atlanta, Georgia, called Spelman College.
Okay.
And it was a premier HBCU. And that really helped me to realize the richness of women like me. You know, I saw women from all over the United States who were math wizards, who were scientists, who, like me, enjoyed history and just came together in the notion of being different, but also realizing how powerful we are. And that got cultivated during my 4 years that I spent in Atlanta. And then from there, I came back to New Jersey. I worked, I always had that travel bug. So I worked for a study abroad organization that helped to have, make sure students travel abroad. And then I applied to grad school to get my master's in international affairs. So I did that in DC. I worked at the U.S. Embassy in Honduras, and that really, again, helped me to realize that international was there, but I didn't know if I'm not a person who, by I guess who I am, I'm a bit of a contrarian, so it was hard for me to automatically say, you know, I'm going to be a proponent of U.S. policy no matter what.
Yeah.
So I decided to go really formulate my career in the private sector.
Right.
But I felt marketing allowed me to do that because it still allowed me to understand people, realize how, what it will be to connect those insights that will really marry products with their needs. So I won't say it was as neat as I'm painting it to be right now. I think I kind of stumbled into it. But all along that thread was, even when I worked in the private sector, I worked at a pharmaceutical company right out of grad school, but I missed that international bit.
Right.
And I also realized I was more towards the communication side of marketing.
Okay.
And I think that tied back to me being a history major and really, again, wanting to just draw those parallels of, how should I say, of patterns, and again, how to act on those patterns. So I ended up from there doing just an informational with a person I knew who ran a multicultural advertising agency, and he hired me, and I was like, okay, I'm doing this now. And so that was learning while I was going. I was like moved up, not even low level advertising, like started out as a supervisor and really had to learn the ropes as I moved along, then worked at another advertising agency from there where my client was Verizon.
Yeah.
And worked there for almost 3 years, and then Verizon hired me. And then I spent the last, I would say, 15 plus years in the telecom industry, working primarily in the marketing communications realm, whether it be in the U.S. speaking to our mass market or our multicultural markets, and that's how we divvy it up or segment the market in the States, focusing on our Hispanic market as well as our African American and Asian market. And that really, I've grown up in telecom and loved it because it's married communication, it's married technology. And just when I thought I was going to be a lifer at Verizon. And just when I started realizing, you know, things are changing a bit, and lo and behold, this opportunity came up at Digicel. And that is how I ended up here, based out of the Caribbean, but doing what I did at Verizon, but more on a global scale, much harder, much more challenging, working across, you know, the markets in the Caribbean as well as South Pacific and Central America. So that's kind of
excellent. So, you know, you gave me a great history and you're very accomplished. But the one thing that stood out for me was that you still experience self-doubt after all you've achieved. So how does that manifest itself and how do you deal with it?
You know, I think where self-doubt comes in, because we as human beings have this uncanny ability to automatically compare, automatically to look at focus on what you don't have versus on what you do have. Yeah. So I do think that I suffered from that. And then in this age of social media and list of 40 under 40, you start, always running, doing that comparison about where you are versus where you are, a person you might have gone to school or a classmate. But I think the way I've been able to counter that is always, and I got this advice from a person who said, as you grow, because I'm not afraid to grow. There's self-doubt, but I'm not afraid to grow. And in order to grow, you have to move yourself. You have to be uncomfortable. And then also, so that's one thing I've done. And then determination is another, I think, quality that I have. I'm determined, no matter what, to succeed. Yeah. I know I might stumble. I know I might make mistakes, but determination has always got me to the end goal. Okay. So, and then I realized as over the years, as you get older, when you have self-doubt, but then you look back and you say, wait a minute, but I did that. At one point, even not career-wise, I was afraid to buy a house on my own, because you think, oh, conventionally, you need to have, your partner.
Yeah.
I'm not savvy with the numbers. And then all of a sudden you find yourself doing it, or you say, okay, I'm going to be a landlord. I never wanted to be that. But guess what? I moved here unexpectedly. I didn't want to sell my condo. Yeah. I had to be a landlord. It was under duress. But before that, every time I thought about it, I said, no. I thought about all the horror stories. I'm not going to be able to do this. But I was forced. I was forced to do it. So I just think that when you look back after time on the other side, you keep telling yourself, oh, I can't do this, I can't do this. But then you realize, you wake up and you've done it.
Yeah. So out of all those challenges, Amy, which one would you say has been the most satisfying that you've overcome?
What's the most satisfying? I think one of the reasons, I just think even being in what we call in the States corporate America, I never considered myself having this life. I was a history major in college. I thought I would teach. I thought that I'm a nice person. So I was like, oh, managing people, making those hard decisions, being confrontational at times, that's not innately me.
Yeah.
But I'm satisfied that, in my career, I started out managing as small as 3 people. Now I've managed upwards to almost 15 people. I have agencies.
Yeah.
So it's that satisfaction of, I could do this. It's a hard job managing people, but then also I find that I'm an effective manager and that I've heard over time that people really enjoy working with me. So I think that's one of those, that's challenging and satisfactory. And I think also just picking up my life and moving over here has been also very satisfying, because it really was a time where I just had to learn. I had to thrive in another culture. I'd lived abroad before, but most for maybe 3
months. Yeah.
How things have turned out.
Excellent. I lost you a little bit there, but that's no problem. So, Amy, has there been a time where you've confronted a challenge, but things have gone horribly wrong? And how do you cope with those situations and regain your confidence when it's been tough?
I think I've gone through some times when I've made a call. I made a decision. I'd entered into a partnership at work, and it was not panning out as it should. The intention was good, but I negotiated something that I thought would work really well for the company in terms of being efficient and saving money.
Yeah.
But in doing so, I'm thinking about, and it's actually happening now, has this been such a negotiation where we save our costs, but look, we're paying for a loss in quality, you know?
Yes.
And now it's a matter of, okay, how do I course correct and make some adjustments so that we can turn around what I think has been, you know, been a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a mistake, but it's just, it's something that we could, I could learn from.
Yeah.
I think what I'm trying to do is always just find a solution and realize that if you look at the world, no one is perfect.
Yeah.
There's constant stumbling blocks, and that's how you learn and you get better. I mean, now I know going into that situation again, what not to do.
Yes.
And then as long as you could always find a way to perform and produce, again, it might not be as planned. You might have to put some band-aids and add some resources to it. Have some contingencies. I think that's something also in everything you do, even though I feel like it's not working out exactly as I planned. We have a setup where we have plan Bs.
Right.
But I think what I could do, and all this is not beat myself up. I think that's the worst thing you could do, is to say, why did I do this? You have to realize you're not perfect. You have to realize that you don't have, as you go through this, you really will be able to improve upon that. So you are allowed to make mistakes. You see it happen all the time. And when you don't learn from this, mistakes is when it's a problem. But just know in life you are going to make mistakes.
Yeah. And in those situations, sometimes when we do make those mistakes, it can dent our confidence. So how do you build on that, and how do you learn to feel comfortable in the uncomfortable?
Well, I think you sit back and go, and again, I think it's always good to not be, you know, as we said, that Monday morning quarterback, or that hindsight is 20/20. I think you prepare yourself that based on the information I have, based on, you know, my assessment, these are the actions I'm going to take. But I think I'm a person who, because I study history, I realize that no one has, no company, no person has gotten to where they have gotten to without failures, without missteps.
Yeah.
And that is a part of the process. If you look at anything that's done in the world, you could plan for something, you could plan to launch, and then all of a sudden push that launch back, you know, something takes place, and that's just part of the process, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going through something now where I'm saying to myself, okay, how do I overcome this? And I just have to say, you know, I have the capacity, I have the capability. It does not mean that I will not make mistakes, but I am going to, I will get through this, you know? Right. And as a person, I think the other thing you have to remember, because we often, I think, as women suffer from this, is that in that self-doubt, kind of like, do I really belong here?
Yes.
You know, do I belong at the table?
Imposter syndrome.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have to always tell yourself, yes, I belong at the
table. You deserve it.
And then what I've also realized over time is, you know, people, the next person could, you know, facade wise, everything is all together.
Yeah.
But that person is probably just like you, you know, going through the same type of machinations and thoughts and feelings and what they're dealing with inside and outside of life. And that's what I keep telling myself, you know, and that no one is perfect, but you have to say, I belong at the table. I will make some mistakes, but as long as I know how to always be proactive in trying to correct and adjust, then that's what this life and world and work is about.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, Amy, share with us a success quote or a mantra that you'd use, and why it's meaningful to you.
Well, I think there's two things that's propelled me, and I just mentioned the whole point of, and Michelle Obama wrote about this last year, I think in her last year of office, she talked about this in an article I read in Glamour magazine, where she told one of her interns that you belong at the table and your voice is worth being heard.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those points that we always have to remember. We're here for a reason.
Yeah.
You bring something to the table.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to speak.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to give your perspective. And don't be afraid to be different.
Yeah.
Because that's clearly one of the reasons that you're at the table. And that's clearly one of the reasons why what you do will be successful, because you are adding your perspective.
Yeah.
So I think that is something. Early in my career, I used to be in meetings and, you know, most of the room would be white men.
Yeah.
And I would be sitting there like, okay, I'm here to learn, but there's really not anything for me to add.
Yeah.
And over time, I had to say, you know what, if I'm invited to this room and to this meeting, that means that I need to be saying something, because then why else would I be in this room?
Yeah.
So I think that's a key piece of advice that I was given, that was given to me from one of my supervisors, and she did become a mentor. And then I think the other piece of advice, which we talked about, is that you have to, and you referred to it, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to, because that's the only way. If you sit in your comfort zone, you will never grow. And it's okay to be completely unsure, completely to say, I don't know where I'm coming, whether I'm coming or going.
Yeah.
But it's always temporary. Like, it's never going to be forever.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to tell yourself. You know what? I just, because of my body and my being, I'm going to learn. I'm going to adjust. Patterns develop in, like, I told my friend the other day, in a day, you know, it doesn't take.
Yeah.
So you're learning constantly. So as long as you could learn, it's okay to be unsure.
Yeah.
The first couple, when I started at Verizon, I feel like the first 6 months, because I had that imposter syndrome, I would drive into the parking lot and I would go, these people are so much smarter than me. They know exactly what they're doing. I don't. You know, for the first 6 months, I was in awe of everyone.
Yeah.
And then one day just flipped where that went away, and I felt like, you know, I belong here. So I think it's really countering those fears and just realizing it's not going to be like this forever.
Yeah. Because I think as women, we may have a tendency to play small. And you talked about having a seat at the table. And it's quite interesting. You said, you know, I was here to learn, but I would flip it around, because the reason they would have employed you or in a particular position is because they want to learn from you.
Exactly.
Not you necessarily learn from them. So, you know, we deserve to be in here, because what we have to contribute is as valuable as what we're going to hear while we're there. So that's always a big thing for me. And again, I like you say, the imposter syndrome. Do I deserve to be here? Have I earned my seat at the table? Well, bloody hell, yes, I have.
exactly.
Yes, right. I have. And you're going to learn today, you know?
Exactly. And what's interesting to me is I am not, like, I look at some of my colleagues. I'm weird, because I possess some qualities of being type A. And then in other situations, I'm completely nonchalant. I'm relaxed. I have a relaxed approach. I wouldn't say nonchalant. I am not obsessive over certain things, but that's my style, and that's how I get things done. I try to create an environment that is nurturing, as well as people feel comfortable and relaxed. That's just because that's the environment that I thrive in. And for a while I said, well, is that the right way to go about doing things? But I have a team who doesn't have that layer of anxiety that sometimes comes along in a really structured environment.
Yes.
They are free to take the initiative. They're free to come and just talk to me like I'm their peer.
Yeah.
And what I found, which has worked for me, is that there's still a respect, you know, because they respect the fact that they're able to really be in an environment that is not controlling. And that's just how I am. It's different. It's a different management style. It might not be how how traditionally things work.
Right.
But I realized that's me. That's who I am. And I only could be honest in me. And I think that's another point that we have to remember, because in this world as women, we always have to conform. And I think as society's adjusting a bit.
Adjusting.
It's adjusting. We're really feeling our voice and who we are and not trying to suppress that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the other. Once you do that, then you become even more powerful and people have to accept you as you are.
Excellent. Excellent. So Amy, looking back, what advice would you give your teenage self?
What advice would I give my teenage self? I would say just what we talked about, that your difference, your ability to just not fit in and not be cookie cutter is your biggest strength.
Yeah.
And run with that and push that. I think my other advice I would give my teenage self is we have a tendency to quiet our, like, we know, I am all of this, quiet it, because we want to make other people feel comfortable. And it's not about that. And then the third thing, because when I was in college, I mentioned this, I studied abroad in London my junior semester year. And my biggest regret was that I was supposed to be there for a year, but then I was missing. And this is what I typically don't do. I was missing. I just pledged a sorority and I was like, oh, I'm missing out on what's going back on in the United States. And I cut my study abroad short. And I think that was one of the biggest regrets, because I just think I was getting started.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also believe that there are no mistakes in life. So, just don't be so hard on yourself, and just know that no matter what, you will rebound. Don't take yourself that seriously. You'll get there and enjoy life. That's the other thing. Yeah. Just enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I love that. I do love that. So, Amy, what would you say are your imperfections and how do you embrace them?
My imperfections. So, I think I've touched upon the fact that I'm a person who performs under pressure. So, I might wait to the last minute, because I'm just like, not waiting to the last minute, I'm thinking, sometimes I'm overanalyzing, and I just, it has to percolate, I have a process, but what I try to do though is then talk to myself and say, Amy, but think about how you're going to feel like the next day when you don't do what you're supposed to do and when you're supposed to do it. So I just constantly talk with myself. another thing, and I didn't talk about this before when we said challenges, but I think I'm a person who's always wanted to do multiple things in life, but then been afraid that I didn't do the traditional route of preparing for that. So I always knew that I kind of wanted to be in this advertising marketing space, but I thought I wasn't creative, so I couldn't do it. And, but then I stumbled my way into doing it. I've also known that I'm a lover of film, and that eventually my next phase, I want to do content. And I was so afraid to do it. I said, I didn't go to film school. But then my friend told me, like, I was going through something with my mom, and she said, you have a story to tell.
Yeah.
And go ahead and do it. And I was relying on, again, the feeling that I didn't have all the capabilities. I need to work with some writer friends. And they were really busy. And then all of a sudden, she encouraged me to go just do it myself.
Yeah.
And I did it, and I'm actually outside of this. It was an internal process for me to go through. I was losing my mom. And I said, how do I document this? Because I was really worried about the sadness of how she was going and what right. you didn't realize and know about her. And in spite of everything, in spite of a job and all that, I just did it and it fell into place. And now I'm basically, you know, the documentary is done. He's color corrected yeah. now. And I just now have to figure out what festivals we're going to submit it to. So it's, so I just, as I said, do it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because I mean, we put these limitations on ourselves because we don't feel we have the qualification or what makes me able to think I can do that. I mean, even doing this podcast, I am nowhere near a broadcaster, but do I like to talk to interesting women? Hell yes.
Exactly.
Do I think other women are going to hear it? Hell yes. So yes. don't stop. You know, don't let that be a limitation. I have the basic equipment, but it does what it says on the tin. You know,
exactly. It's true. And the other thing too that we have to realize, because I think growing up in this stage where you went to college, you program, you feel like the more educated, you talk yourself into why you can't do it.
Yes.
But realize in this day and age, kids get up, they don't go to school, they don't go to, you know, higher ed, they create these industries, these empires.
Yeah.
So you could do it. What's stopping you? Like you said, Excellent. You have technology.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
do it. So that's the thing, you have to stop. Sometimes the more educated you are, the more you give reasons to, you know,
not to do
why
it.
you know, these educated reasons why you can't do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And get out of your own way is what I say.
Definitely. And add to that as well is that it's not just age. I am early 50s and embarking on this. And I call this my reincarnation. You know, I've had my children, you know, I've had the career that I wanted to have and more. But now it's time to do something for me. And I'm not going to feel selfish about it because, you know, it's my time. It's my time. I've paid my dues, so I'm going to take my time. Was it Maxine Walters taking back my time? So
it's true. And we're constantly the chapters keep. I was doing one of those comparison moments, and my best friend said to me, "You know, there are more chapters to your story, Amy. Very much. Your book is not done, and that's what I hear you saying. This is another chapter. That's the beauty." Excellent.
So Amy, I'm going to start wrapping up now. So last couple of questions. What's your definition of success?
My definition of success is being fulfilled, is really aligning your spirit for what the universe wants you to do. I think, and then being able to live out what you want to do. It's not about money.
Yeah.
It's about just being fulfilled and happy, whether it be personally, whether it be professionally. I think that's my definition of success, being fulfilled and also just being appreciative, you know, appreciative for your life and the good and the bad. I think that's my my definition. And as you said, I'm sorry.
No,
I would just say, and then at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, existing.
Yeah.
So if you are beyond that and you are thriving, I think that's success.
Yeah. And how would you say that has changed as you've matured?
I think it's changed because I think many things in life, you know, I had to alluded to the fact that if I look at my younger self where I feel like I had a charmed childhood, I felt like I had, you know, this definition of what I thought my life would be, whether it be a wife, a mother, whatever career. And I think as you go through loss, as you go through resiliency to understand what you could overcome in spite of, you realize what's important. You know, there were years when I was just head to the ground and I, you know, my mom was always such a biggest supporter and my mom used to call me all the time, every day. And I used to be, I'm busy, I have work to do, blah, blah, blah. And I think about now just to hear her voice.
Yeah.
And I say to myself that I think that just what your life experiences help you realize what's important. So it's not about, okay, you know, having the best car or living in this certain neighborhood or, you know, hanging in these circles, having this fortune. It's really not that, because you could still be miserable. And I think just realizing what's important through those life experiences has made me realize what's important, whether it be work-wise, whether it be in my personal life, you know, relationships I've had, just have made me realize, okay, qualities I look for in people, niceness, you know, can I be myself?
Yeah, very much.
You know, do you encourage me? Do I feel like I don't have to walk around on eggshells? Like,
that's
what someone asked me the other type, just on a personal note, what's your type? And man, I said, you know, it's funny. Like, is he nice and dependable? Like, that's kind of what I'm looking for. So it's just what you go through, what that makes you realize what's important at the end of the day.
Excellent. And lastly, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
What does it mean to be my own hero? Wow, that's a tough one. I think what that means to me is that I'm not looking for anyone else. I'm not looking for my happiness or being rescued by some external resource. I know that source could come from within. I know any experience outside of that is enhancement. And I had to learn this the other day, because I am a person, because I am so determined that I feel like I could fix everything. And but I also then have to rely on faith.
Right.
So the more that I have faith and realize that there is a higher power, that the combination of that higher power and my belief in me is what's going to allow my dreams to come true.
Excellent.
So that's kind of what that means to me.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that, Amy. That was my last question. And it's been an absolute delight talking to you today. If persons want to get in touch with you, is that possible? Or do you do any private work?
So persons, if they are inclined, yes, I could give my personal information out. I don't know if you want me to give my personal email out now. If you do so, it's Amy, AMY, B as in boy, G as in girl, 33@gmail.com. Please feel free to get in touch with me.
Because I know you have a great film career ahead of you.
Well, it's funny. I'll tell you one last note. My name of my company is called Precipice Entertainment. And I did that because I have a fear of heights, but at the same time, I said those women of color were on the edge of society, but on the brink of greatness. So
beautiful. I love that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that so you mean now you've I love that.
Yeah, so that's what I'm, so my documentary is, you know, produced by Precipice Entertainment.
Excellent. So thank you so much for that again, Amy.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you. Thanks.
Great talking to you as well. Bye-bye.
Well, all that remains to be said, as ever, it's my pleasure to show up here every week and connect with like-minded women who want to live their life to its fullest and be empowered to take their career to the next level. I do hope you're inspired and enjoyed this edition of Phenomenal Woman. And if you like what you heard, please make sure you rate and review on iTunes, as that's how we get to share with all the phenomenal women that are out there. Also, make sure you share with all the phenomenal women that you know. You can connect with me via janicesutherland.com, and I'm on all social media platforms. So Facebook, it's I Am Janice Sutherland, and Twitter and Instagram, I'm The Real Talkist. Links are all in the show notes. So remember, you are the author of your own story. You control the narrative, and you have the power to give your life story a happy ending. So own it. Until next time.